Good afternoon. This is Nevin Campanella welcoming you to the Saturday edition of Wooden Stars Radio. Here at Wooden Stars, we believe that every human on the planet has the power to use their thoughts to change events in the mundane world. This show is all about learning how to gain control of that creative process. Well, folks, this is a different kind of show. The Saturday edition of Wooden Stars is primarily used for presentation of specific information. And these are usually in a semi-seminar format, and it's intended only as an educational device. In other words, there'll be no showboating on here. I'm not really going to try to entertain you. If you want to pay attention, think of it as a classroom situation. That's right, folks, a classroom situation. Because what's going to be offered here is something that you really have to focus on. You may laugh, you may cry, you may actually get interested. And in all honesty, the front end of it can be a little bit boring because I'm going to ask you to think about things you don't normally think about, and it's not really all that entertaining. Now, call-ins are very much welcome. Again, this is a classroom type of situation, and in a classroom you have lots of questions. Don't hesitate to call, ever. If you want something clarified, if you want to make a comment, there's nothing that has to be accomplished in this particular hour. I'm going to go through my own personal notes on creating your own reality, and I'm in no rush to get it done. So I'll be hemming and hawing and coughing and looking at my notes, just like the old prof I did back at the university in Utah. So, let's see, we do have some call-in numbers. Most direct line is 530-413-4515. However, thank you, Don Newsom, we also have a toll-free number. And in the U.S. of A, it is 877-270-8714. And for all my buddies and friends up in Canada, especially Christopher Holmes, if he's listening, we have toll-free 888-228-4494 and a direct line from Canada, 530-413-4511. Wow, that's a lot of phone numbers. Are we going to be doing co-hosting and all that? You betcha. And, in fact, today we have Wambui. Hi, Wambui. How you doing?
Hi, Nevin. I'm doing great. I'm ready to get into what you're going to be telling us.
What I'm hoping is that I can actually get this started. You know, I have covered this topic on radio over the past month, at least the beginning, the startup, at least three or maybe even four times. I don't even know anymore. And it seems like every time I get started, I get sidetracked and go off in a different direction. However, I called Don a week or so back and said, you know, I could really use some Saturday time to present this material. And we're not going to keep, as far as I know, we're not going to keep Saturday open unless there's other material to present. And there may be. I really don't know. My assumption is that I can get through most of this in 2 or 3 hours. But that remains to be seen. Okay, let's jump in. We're really going to talk about the reality of creating your own reality. And what do you have to do to actually do it? Well, first of all, you got to believe it. Yeah, you really have to believe you can create your own reality. And that's not an easy belief to maintain. And you know why? Simple. Because you see things happening to you as some sort of accident, or you see yourself possibly as a victim. And so you start saying to yourself, well, how can I create my own reality when I've got all these things going on that I have no control over? Well, what I'm here to tell you is that you have control over everything. And now, do I mean that that's somehow limited by, let's say, can you grow wings and just fly off the planet and up into the clouds? Yes. Yes, I am saying that. There are no limits. Well, then how come I'm not doing it? How come I haven't grown a pair of wings and just soared around? I haven't been able to learn that part yet. I still have my own hang-ups in terms of, do I really believe all this? We all go through that. There's always that moment of doubt. Unfortunately, that moment of doubt prevents us from accomplishing many of the things we'd like to do, many of the more fantastic parts of creating your own reality. But I got to tell you, recently in my own life, I must be getting better at it because things are really happening. As I think about them, they so happen. And you've experienced it yourself. How often have you been thinking of someone, and all of a sudden the phone rings in his head? That's part of this. That's part of you creating your reality. That's part of them creating their reality. This is very real. You know, sometimes it's hard to describe what am I talking about in the way of energy in terms of creating your own reality. About the best way I can think of it for right now is like some sort of radio wave out to the universe, and it's picked up. Now, I'm not going to say that I know how it's picked up or all the dynamics of it, how it's processed, but I know it works, and I can use it. I don't have to know and understand the internal operation of existence in order to create my own reality. As an example, I don't know a damn thing about thermodynamics, but I can fry a hamburger. Yeah, just give me the fryer and the frying pan. You know, if I have a fire and a frying pan, I can make a hamburger, but I don't have a clue about the chemistry involved. I don't need to know. I am going to, and there's a trick to this too. Don't forget that. Every time I stand in front of the stove with the frying pan and that burger, I make an assumption that I'm going to wind up with a cooked burger. Creating your own reality is a little bit like that. You have to make a few assumptions about who you are and what you can do and what is your position within the total universe. Now, this is important. If you don't focus on a few of those assumptions about who you are, the existential question, you're not going to have much of a foundation for creating your own reality. And in fact, what will happen is you'll wind up with a lot of mixed messages. So what needs to be done in the way of groundwork? Well, you have to start analyzing your belief systems, and we will get to those one by one. A second major issue, and this probably should be at the top, is letting go of the victim mentality. This is a tough one, because your ego is involved. What do I mean by the victim mentality? Well, let's talk about the small hurts you believe have happened to you by others. Let's begin with that one. I don't know. Let's take an example. You get up in the morning, you're having a cup of coffee, and your mate seems to start chewing on you a little bit for not having taken out the garbage. And you see yourself at that point as a victim. A victim of that individual. As long as you maintain that mentality, you will never be able to create your own reality. That is going to stop you every time. Well, am I talking about victimization at larger levels? Like, I don't know, I'm standing in my house, somebody kicks in the door and has a big gun and says, give me all your money. Am I a victim? You're going to be surprised at my answer. No, you're not a victim. Someone is definitely doing something, and they think they're doing it to you. but how do you decide to accept it? What do you do with the situation? There's an excellent example of this in a movie called The Peaceful Warrior. And it's kind of a neat scene. Nick Nolte, the actor that plays Socrates in the movie, and the individual who plays Dan Millman, seem to encounter a bunch of tough guys in the middle of the street who want their wallets. Now, Dan Millman immediately assumes that because Socrates is so cool and could do so many things, he's just going to simply, perform some kind of magic and wipe these guys out. But in fact, what he does is say, oh, yeah, sure, here's your wallet. And he hands it to him. Of course, it just blows Dan Millman away. And he looks at him and says, what are you doing that for? He said, because they asked for it. So the guys start walking away with their wallets, and Nick Nolte calls out to him and says, hey, what about our watches? So the guys turn around and come back to get the watches. He says, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have a watch. But this guy next to me does. You get the point. In other words, what Socrates, played by Nick Nolte, was demonstrating was that he wasn't about to accept the role of being a victim. He simply wouldn't do it. Now, of course, that's at a very large scale, and I am not saying to you that we can all do this right now. But you can do it in small ways. You really can. When that person comes up to you and starts criticizing you, you don't have to accept that. You don't have to see yourself as a victim of that criticism. That's a small thing you can do. You may not be able to handle it at the larger level of somebody kicking in your door or pointing a gun in your face, but you can most certainly start with a small step. And that's what I'm here to tell you. You have to take this in small steps. You can't just go out and create your own reality. In other words, you don't just shout out to the universe, I want $10,000 right now. And, of course, you were the kind of person who saw yourself as a victim and a poor soul all your life. Well, it ain't going to happen. Because when you shouted that out, believe me, at the subconscious level, there were many other parts of you that were saying, yeah, this ain't going to work. So, you start in small steps with the whole victim role thing. Where do you start? Pick a person. There are many people around you that when you encounter them, you don't feel so good. You feel a little bit irritated because you know that they're going to say something really dumb or stupid or critical. Start with that kind of person. Preferably not someone that you have a close relationship with. For instance, maybe there's a local sales clerk, say at Walmart, that every time you encounter the person, they seem kind of a little on the nasty side. And every time you've gone there, you've always walked away saying, why, that person there really pissed me off. Start with that person. You don't have a personal relationship, and you can start dealing with what is happening to you at that point. Of letting go of the victim mentality. Now, the Buddha, a long time ago, said, if someone hands you a gift and you don't accept it, who does it belong to? That's what I'm talking about. If a person hands you a pile of crap and you don't accept it, who does it belong to? It belongs to the person that was trying to hand it to you. That's right. You simply don't accept it. Nick Nolte, alias Socrates in the movie, absolutely refused to be a victim. So he started giving them everything. The funniest scene was towards the end. You see Socrates and Dan Millman walking down the road with only their underwear on, but he gave them everything. That's the ultimate of not being a victim, of seeing yourself as never being a victim. Also, there are some very grand historical figures that have demonstrated this to us very well. One of them is the man Jesus the Christ. He demonstrated this very well. And in fact, for the Christians out there, there's even a passage in your own Christian Bible that says, turn the other cheek. Well, that's what it's all about. Turn the other cheek, because you're not a victim. Never, ever are you a victim. Well, a third level that can really get in your way of creating your own reality is the old self-fulfilling prophecy. And matter of fact, I encountered this one today with my own daughter. And you've heard it described many, many times. In its simplest form, it might be something like a thought, I can't do this. In other words, you look at something, there's an appreciation for it, but all of a sudden the thought comes into your head, I can't do this. Let me tell you, folks, that little message is a killer. That is the self-fulfilling prophecy. You have just established that you're not going to be able to do it. Another one of these kinds of things is the what-if-ing. And we've all done it. You know, you feel like you're involved in something really super important, and then you start what-if-ing yourself. What if this happens? What if that happens? You know, you spend all your time and all your energy what-if-ing yourself into the ground. Get rid of what-if. Because that's a mixed message. It really is mixed. As soon as you say, what if I lose my home tomorrow? You just set up a scenario for losing your home. These are thoughts that happen to every one of us. Can we change it? Absolutely. It takes practice. It takes diligent practice. When you say, what if, you stop yourself immediately and you take a hard, cold look at yourself. You sit down and start looking and analyzing at why you just thought the what if statement. You do the same thing for I can't do this or any self-fulfilling prophecy. As an example, and I'm sure this happens to a lot of people. You go buy a lottery ticket, and you take it home, you show it to your friend, your mate, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, oh, yeah, what are your chances of winning that? Well, for sure, that thought is now in your head. When that happens, guess what? We have a lot of mixed messages going on. Your chances of winning a lottery are going to be a lot less. Now, am I saying that you can create your own reality and actually win a lottery? If you do it right, absolutely. Absolutely. Do I know how to do that? Do I, Nevin, actually know how to do that? Yeah, I know how. I just don't have enough practice at it. I also have a lot of mixed messages that I constantly give out. And I'm probably giving out some right now. For instance, a mixed message to my own head is, am I presenting this material in an appropriate fashion? That's a mixed message. Because I'm questioning it. What should be going through my head is, this is cool. There's the audience, all 80 million of them, are actually understanding the material. There's nothing mixed about that kind of message. But if I say to myself while I'm speaking to the audience, gee, I hope I'm getting this across, or did I pronounce that word correctly, and so on and so forth, that's going to stop me every time. It makes things worse. Now, believe it or not, I'm not the first person to have said what I'm saying. You know, I mean, people have known for a long time that you really can control events around you by positive thought. Yeah, positive thought works.
not only works, in order to create your own reality in terms of a positive outcome, that's what you have to have, is a positive thought. Something else, one of our co-hosts, who is not here today, Michael Mason, had said a number of shows back that one of the things people have to stop doing is even thinking about the situation, because that in itself continues a situation. And he's quite correct. Let's talk, and I'm going to do this right now to you, because there's no other way to do it. I have to say to you, the Iraq War. Okay, what happened? I just set up a scenario in your head of dead bodies, violence, guns, so on and so forth. I don't like the Iraq War. Many of you out there don't want to have that kind of involvement. But if we start talking about it, again, we do continue the process. Now, this may seem a little Pollyannish to many of you, and maybe in a way it is. But again, I won't be the first person to have said, think like a child. Nope. I will not be the first person to have said that. We take life so seriously that we forget that this is all something we, in fact, have created. So when it comes right down to it, if you're listening to this show and you haven't, and you say to yourself, well, I really don't believe him. I am a victim at times, and I know damn well I am. By all the people around me, there's no point in you listening to the show anymore, because there's nothing you can get out of this that's going to help you create your own reality. You really have to let go of that. Well, we start this entire process of creating our own reality by first coming to an understanding of our beliefs and assumptions regarding the nature of the universe and our position within that framework. Who are you? Michael had asked that question at the very end of our very first show. And in fact, what was going to happen at that time is the next show was going to be a follow-up on that question. That's like three shows back. I never could get to it, because the show started expanding, and we grew, and it was a necessary thing, but I never could get back to that question, which is why I opened the Saturday section. But who are you? That is an age-old question. Who am I? Some of the gurus in the Far East present it with a slightly different twist to it. They would say, who is it that asks the question? And what they're referring to is, who are you without any of the external handles, such as the handle of being a mom, or a talk show host, or a doctor, lawyer, whatever. If you get rid of all the handles, including your name, who are you? Interesting, huh? Can you answer that question? Can you actually think of who you are without referring to a category that has developed over time on this planet? Surely you're more than the secretary in the office. Surely you're more than the person who's on an assembly line doing assembly work. Okay, so we get rid of your occupation. Now who are you? Well, you're a dad. Well, we get rid of that. Now who are you? Well, my name is Joe. Well, let's get rid of the name. Now who are you? You start peeling all the layers of the onion skin away, trying to find out who you are. Well, in order to arrive at some answers, you kind of have to start with what you believe about your own existence. And that's where we start the whole process of understanding and learning about creating our own reality. What do I believe about my existence? You're gonna wind up making certain assumptions. And the assumption that you make, by the way, there is no right or wrong assumption. The assumption that you make sets up a particular form or method for creating your own reality. Now, there are some people who make no assumptions about their existence. In other words, they might say, well, it's unknowable, so therefore I'm not even going to bother with the question. Those people are not going to get anything out of this kind of seminar. Believe me, it's not going to happen because they're not even paying attention to it. Those are the kind of people who most likely want to see existence strictly as a hardcore observational kind of thing. In other words, they can see it, they can smell it, they can feel it. And if they can't do any of those things, put it under a microscope, then it doesn't exist. This seminar is not for them. Now, there's another group of people who say to themselves, well, I've been taught who I am, but I'm not sure that what I've been taught is the truth. And so they kind of set about searching for truth all their life. Do they ever find it? No. Why not? The fact of existence, from my point of view, there is no truth. None at all. And that's because I believe we have created this illusion we call the third dimension. So as far as I'm concerned, there is no more truth in my waking life than there is in my dream life. Well, I guess the very first step in trying to get a handle on all this is taking a look at what assumptions we're likely to make. And one of the most very obvious, and this is extremely obvious, is, am I my brain? Now, that's a very legitimate assumption to look at, because we are told by science that, in fact, you are your brain. And if you think about it, right now, as you're listening to this show, you're listening with a sense of consciousness up in your head area somewhere. In other words, you're not listening through your feet, or at least you don't feel that. You know, the sensory input is through your ears, which seems to have something to do with your head region, which contains the brain. Also, there's a focus of vision, which is also in the head area. So again, there's this sense of, oh, geez, you know, I seem to be up in this top part of this body somewhere. I can't quite get a handle on it, but I feel like I'm up there somewhere because I don't really sense anything else down below. I don't sense it through my toes or my fingers. I don't feel like my consciousness is at the end of my big toe. I feel like it's up here in my head. Well, it's a logical assumption at that point to say, geez, without any other information, I must be my brain. But are we our brain? Well, the brain is a very wonderful organ, one of the most magnificent organs probably ever created. But what is it? It's a switching device. That's right. It's a switching device. Think of thousands upon thousands of networks of cables going in and out and around, and each cable is passing information at a rate that is unbelievable in speed. I mean, it is so unbelievable that we can't contrive computers to do the work of a brain. But your brain can do, there is no computer on the face of the planet that can mimic what you can do almost instantaneously. I mean, as an example, here we go, pink elephant, wham! Your brain, right at that point, developed all kinds of switches and mechanisms in thinking about a pink elephant and seeing a pink elephant and thinking about maybe the Africa or India where elephants come from. No computer could put all those pieces and associations together that quickly. Some of you may have thought of, gee, someone who's drunk, who's had too much alcohol. Believe me, no computer can do that. Science calls this the associative areas of your brain. And let me tell you, it's pretty magnificent. It can switch data in and out so fast and draw relationships so deep all the way back to your early childhood, almost instantaneously. There is no computer that can do that. So, we know the brain is an absolutely fantastic device, but can it do anything without you? Ah, there's the trick. If we take you out, the brain don't function no more. What do I mean by that? Take you out. Well, you know, you can go to a morgue and you can try to talk to a dead body containing a brain all day long, but you're not going to get too far. The brain will just sit there. Oh, but Nevin, come on. Don't you really mean, though, that death itself is the stopping of the function of the brain? Well, it certainly has stopped. It has done that, but what made it go to begin with? What I'm telling you is that the only thing that makes anything go in terms of your body is you being there and you functioning with it. Now, to confuse the issue, I will say this, that every part of existence, including every part of your body, every hair on your head, every leaf on every tree also does have its own form of existence in terms of self-awareness. So if you go into a morgue and you try to talk to a brain, you're not going to get very far. But that doesn't mean that the brain itself is somehow not part of the total consciousness of existence. The material that's there does continue to function, but not at a level that we can understand. Well, what happens when you stimulate different areas of the brain? Let's take a live body instead of the person dead. What do we get? We stimulate different areas of the brain, a little electrical impulse, and memories occur, or there's a sensory experience. Well, doesn't that mean that something is inside the brain? Well, let me tell you, you cannot put a slice of brain under a microscope and find any of these events. You can take all the slices you want of a piece of brain tissue, and you're not going to see the memory of the last 4th of July or the last Labor Day weekend, which is this weekend. It's not going to happen. There's nothing there to see because the brain functions as a part of chemistry. And I'm going to step out for a second and talk a little bit about that. People want to think of the electrical activity of the brain. And it's true, that's how we measure it. But the actual operation between the cables, there's a little connection, these little synapses, okay? That's the connector. That's all that that means. They don't actually touch each other. It's a chemical transfer from the end of one cable to another. The brain is, in fact, an organ of chemistry. And once the chemical passes from one cable to another, then we measure the result electrically. But the brain truly passes information by a chemical process. Is that important? Nope. Not at all, but I thought you might like to have that little piece of information. No, it's not important at all. But when you do stimulate a brain, you do get memories, you do get sensory experiences, but you have to rely on the report from the person. In other words, you stimulate a part of the brain. There's no pain, by the way. There are no pain receptors up there in the brain. They stimulate different areas of the brain, usually while they're doing open brain surgery and the person has agreed to a little bit of research. They stimulate different areas, and the person then starts reporting, geez, I can see my Aunt Mary, or, gee, I feel like I just ate a cookie, or, wow, that cup of coffee I just had was great. These are the sensory experiences. So as you stimulate different parts of the brain, these kinds of things will happen. Now comes the problem. As you stimulate different areas of the brain and you get these reports, the natural assumption to make, the common assumption, is that, well, you've just stimulated that particular item. You not only stimulated the brain, but there was a storage capacity of some sort within the brain that held that experience. And we just simply do not know how to see it under a microscope as yet. That's the assumption, that the brain actually stores this information, that it's more than just a switching mechanism, that it somehow actually does contain the memory. It does actually contain all the experiences. Well, let's do a little analogy. We take a simple battery-operated radio playing a music station, okay? Great little battery-operated radio, which, by the way, seems to be becoming scarce nowadays. My wife was trying to find one, but apparently you have to now go to MP3 players and so on and so forth. But anyway, back to the analogy. We take a simple battery-operated radio, and it's playing music. And we place it in the middle of a restaurant. Well, and people might ask us to lower the music coming out of the radio, but everyone in there is going to understand what that radio is and how it operates. You take that same radio and place it in the middle of a primitive village, okay? We're going to have to get hypothetical here. A village that has never had any experience with technology. Some sort of very primitive village, maybe down in South America, we discover. You put the radio in the middle of the village, you turn on that battery-operated radio, it starts playing music. Well, so the villagers gather around the music. It's certainly going to be fascinating to them. Now, if you ask them, where is the music, they'll tell you that it's in that thing. It's in the radio. They don't know anything else. All they know is it's coming out of there, so it must be there originally. They couldn't think in any other terms. Well, it's certainly coming out of the radio, but there is nothing stored in that radio. Nothing at all. That radio is a switching device, an extremely simplified version of the brain. It's simply transmitting a signal from somewhere else. But it sure as hell looks like the music is actually in the radio. Just like our brain looks as if it's storing data. Yeah. It has that appearance. But when you open the radio, you will not find music. When you open the brain, you're not going to find memories or sensory experiences. So for myself, and this may only be for me, I have eliminated the possibility that I am, in fact, my brain. Well, the thought isn't stored in a brain. Then where the hell is it? I mean, come on, I've just eliminated the storage the most obvious storage device, which is the brain, and I'm saying, nope, it ain't there. So where is it?
You have a color monitoring. You have a color monitoring.
Put them on. Hello.
Hello. How's Nevin doing this great evening?
Oh, I'm doing fine. To whom am I speaking?
This is Michael Mason with Woodland Stars Radio. How are my stars doing this evening?
Michael, welcome to the show. What are you doing right now, and what do we owe this fantastic call to?
I was listening to the most fascinating radio show as I could possibly think of, and it made me think of you, and I think mainly it was because you were the one talking, and I thought, hey, I'm going to call in, and I'm going to talk to Nevin and Wham Billy. I'm creating my own reality by calling you and jumping on the show.
Yes, you are. I mean, that's exactly what he did. He created his own reality by doing that. Fantastic. I thought you were going to be working all day.
Well, sometimes I work, and then other times I act like I work, but sometimes I think I act like I work better than I work. So that's why I decided, you know what? When listening, I'm not going to do anything that is going to accomplish anything other than, you know, learn with my friends on the radio. So here I am.
Well, this is a good time to make an announcement about you to the general audience. If you know, Woodland Stars Radio has just started, and some of you may have become familiar with names of who we are. One of them is Ryan Scherer. Ryan has changed his name, and he is now known as Michael Mason. This is a good time to talk about the use of name change and creating your own reality. What stimulated that, Michael?
Well, I had listened, as a matter of fact, to our interview that Wham Billy had done interviewing you, and I thought to myself, wow, how powerful is that? To let go of that old baggage, to just let it go, and say, I'm going to recreate myself. Not only am I going to recreate my reality around me, but I'm going to recreate the vision that I have of me. And so I did. I said, Michael, right? How many Michaels do we have in the world? Thousands. You know, me and Wambui were on the line earlier, and we were chatting back and forth, and we were going back and forth, and it was like, I'm spirit. You know, I'm this, I'm that. And I had said to her, you know, I am you are me, and we are all. And I believe that. And I took the name Michael because I thought, we're everybody. We're all the same creature. And there are so many Michaels. And Michael also, in Hebrew and several other languages, and as you had pointed out to me earlier in email, via Irish with the EAL, which is separate from the way I've done it, but is godlike. And we are all godlike. It says in the Christian Bible that, you know, you were created in the image of your maker. And we are. We're all source power. We're all godlike. So I choose Michael. Mason, the way I came up with that, is I happen to be a Mason. You know, they're a bunch of good people, and they do good things around the world. And I thought to myself, I like being a good person. So
it's an excellent combination. Folks, it gives Michael a chance to drop some old baggage attached with old names. And we do that. We carry baggage with us in our name. Name contains the experience. We think of it ourselves as that name. Well, what do you think about not being your brain?
Well, I think the fact of the matter is no one is their brain. Your brain is essentially a piece of the energy that you are, and it's a great processor for the stuff that you bring in, you know, via your eyes, your ears, everything around you, your senses. You know, the brain processes that, but I'm not my brain. I'm you. I'm Wambui. You know, I'm my friend Brian. I'm everybody around me because I'm no different than the tree that sits in your front yard. We're all made from the same exact energy.
And also, if you were to take a microscope put the brain under that microscope or any part of our bodies, and you start going back, separating, trying to get to the minutest part of who we are, you would come to no thing. There would be nothing there when you start separating it. And we see these images in our bodies, and but we are really no thing. We are all things and no thing. And I...
We are all things and no things. Excellent. You know, the issue that's being raised here about the brain is if you start focusing on yourself as your brain, you separate yourself from all of the brains. You have your own personal brain. I've got my personal brain, so on and so forth. That's called separation. What I'm trying to get across to everyone is you definitely are not your brain, and the reason you're not is for the very reasons that both Wambui and Michael have brought up. You are everything. You are all of it. It's all the, quote, God stuff. Whether we're talking about a piece of flesh on your arm, or whether we're talking about a grain of sand, it's all the same stuff. Well, absolutely, positively, we are not our brain. And the question, though, does remain, if I'm not my brain, where the hell is everything stored? Well, I have no idea. I mean, I don't. I can't say to you that I know how this process works. And in fact, all these memories and sensory experiences, they may not be anywhere that we can describe as part of the third dimension. I mean, thoughts such as my memory of my little dog Jasper is an abstract event that cannot be observed and can only be reported by me. Now, I bring up my little dog Jasper because we recently lost Jasper. He was very old, and we finally went to the vet, and that was the only humane thing to do. But I think about Jasper. I've got a picture of my little dog on the website. Well, where is that memory? Am I going to find it inside my brain? Absolutely not. It's an abstract event, and you cannot put it under a microscope. Well, if we can't find these abstract events under a microscope, then what? Maybe we reach out to another form of existence that somehow stores abstract thought? Maybe. Other people have talked about this.
Kinetic
energy. I certainly wouldn't be the first. There are some people who have talked about this grand library that exists. Edgar Cayce was one of them. He talked about this grand library of existence where you could literally go in and reach for a piece of information, not only of memories and experiences, but he stated that you could reach in and pull out solutions to problems or possibly even look at future events. We'll cover that in another part of the ceremony because we're bordering now on the term infinity. But where is all this stored? I have no idea. And I'm not about to say, oh, it's part of the magnificent library of the universe. Because when I do that, the minute I do that, I start putting limits on it. And I refuse to do that. I am not going to limit it to a contrived statement. Maybe Edgar Cayce is correct, but I don't want to think in those terms. For myself, this information, things that I think about, the thought process, and all the things that pass through me, I believe exist in the universe freely, without restriction. I guess what I'm saying to you is I don't see it contained in a box like a library. I don't see it contained in something like a book. I certainly don't see it contained in the third dimension. But quite possibly what I do kind of believe is that every thought I have, Wambui and Michael, can be aware of, because they have access to the same universe of existence that I do. And I'm also saying that every hair on my head has access to that information. But can you find it as a stored kind of thing, like in a box? Nope, I don't think so. My own personal conclusion, quite simply, I am not my brain. Okay, so if I am not my brain, then what am I? What is the composition of the cell? Well, the only evidence we have of something beyond the physical body is that of self-awareness, called thinking. It really is the only thing that we can look at a personal level and say, yes, something exists beyond the physical body, and that is my self-awareness. Again, this comes about, this piece of logic comes about because of my conclusion that I am not my brain. Well, if I'm not my brain, then I have something beyond my physical body, which is my self-awareness. Now, it's this single aspect of the self that we use to assert the fact of our existence. Yeah. Rene Descartes reasoned that since thought did exist and could not be separated from him, therefore, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. That's how he establishes that. What he was saying is, thought can't exist without me, so I must be here. With the fact of our existence established, we then have a starting point for investigating not only the self, but everything we call creation, that is the universe of the third dimension. Well, this gets really tricky. And most people are familiar with Descartes' conclusion. However, and this is what most people don't know, Descartes actually gave up that conclusion. Now, I'm not saying that he's giving up the fact of his existence, but he gave up the method that he used to arrive at that existence. But it kind of became popular, and it kind of sounds cool, cogito ergo sum. So people kind of go walking around saying, I think, therefore I am. But Descartes, he actually dropped the whole I think, therefore I am concept. The reasons get really difficult to describe philosophically, but what he did do in a roundabout way, he dropped this premise to the simple statement, I am, I exist. Now, following his logic does get tough, but essentially it comes down to his premise that since he is capable of belief in his existence, therefore he does exist. And he's very cautious to state that he cannot prove any existence beyond himself, that each individual has to do that for himself or herself. Now understand what I'm saying. Descartes got to a point where he said, well, that was pretty cool what I said, you know, a few years ago, I think therefore I am, but it really doesn't kind of cut the mustard. The fact is, I exist because I believe I exist. And he and everyone else around him was quite satisfied with that. Well, I happen to agree with Descartes. I simply insist on the reality of my existence via the avenue of self-awareness. Well, there's not much basis for scientific proof of that, but it's enough for me. So after almost an entire hour of presenting seminar material on who am I and do I exist, I'm saying to you, at a personal level, my self-awareness believes I exist, therefore I do, and that's enough for me. I don't have to go past that. I don't have to find it in a book. I don't have to get philosophical about it. I don't have to develop a religion to prove my existence. Nope. My self-awareness, as I just sit here and think about myself, is enough for me to say, yes, I do exist. Now,
and you need no label.
Say that again?
and you need no label.
I'm not hearing you.
I'm sorry. Am I not speaking loud enough?
Yeah, there you go. That's better. Say that again, Michael.
You have no label. You know,
right.
You have to be comfortable without having a label. Society today is so hung up on labels of putting people as white or black or male or female or an accountant or a stockbroker, whatever your label is that you're going by, you have to release that label.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about, folks, releasing those labels. And I said at the beginning of all of this, you know, when I talked about the gurus in the Far East, who is it that asked the question without any of the labels? Well, we are up to our 55 minutes, and I am out of time. These shows only run for 55 minutes. And on next Saturday, I will cover a few more of the assumptions and then get into the area of infinity. Before I close, Michael or Wambuli, say that again.
Hello?
Wambuli,
I think that was you talking back to yourself, Nevin.
No, I'm definitely here. I didn't hear the end of your question. Were you asking a question or making a statement?
I was just asking if you have any closing comments.
I just feel I was talking to a friend earlier today about the fact of how easy really it is when you realize that we just are, and that is we can create our own reality, as you've been saying. Everything just becomes easy when it's not you don't take things so seriously. You just know that you are, and it's okay. And that's all I have to say, is that once I started believing that and realizing that, things became much easier in my life.
And they will for everyone else. Well, folks, that's the end of our show. Don or Seth, if you're listening, I'm saying goodbye, and thank you all for listening. May you come back next Saturday. May all your wishes come true. Good night.
Night.
Good night.